As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Hello and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I'm Joe Devine and I'm now joined by JJ Bull, the Bullard. Hello, JJ.
Hello, Joe.
How are you?
I'm good. It was nice to watch England do well.
They did well, didn't they?
Other English people.
Yeah, they did well, but it was also nervy.
I think England controlled that game very well. Some controversial moments, one in particular.
Well.
But I think England probably were... overall, the better team.
I think so. Do you know, it's one of those games I think that's now it's finished, I feel like I need a whole day away from it and to watch it again before I can say anything that resembles what happened. Do you know what I mean? You know, when you watch a game that you're so into it that the entire narrative is drawn by your own mind and isn't necessarily relevant to what has actually occurred.
Yeah, especially when you support one of the teams. Yes, I know this feeling well.
Yeah. Well, if you want to get out of your own head and you want the world to... drive your narrative for you so you can be more objective, then you should visit The Athletic. If you visit theathletic.com/TIFO, you'll find that for the next few days only, you can get a deal that sees you pay £1 per month for 6 months to have full access to The Athletic and all kinds of objectivity, JJ.
Yes, lots of excellent articles as well. There's one I read today that I really liked. I can't remember what it was, but it was very good.
So good.
Yeah.
So good.
There's lots of... words and pictures occasionally on it. What was it? It was really good.
Well, do you know what I like so much about The Athletic? There were two different previews for the England-Denmark game, like tactical previews. One which I very much enjoyed, which was Michael Cox's, where he talked about why they might play a back three, which they did after they went ahead. And there was also the video version, which was a TIFO video, which incidentally, you can, if you have The Athletic, you can watch TIFO videos without any adverts. And you can also listen to the TIFO podcast, totally ad-free too, on the app. That's my favourite thing, because it involves me. There we go. So that's theathletic.com/TIFO. But we are going to speak today, of course, about the penalty. We're going to talk about Kasper Schmeichel. We're going to talk about Saka a little bit, although it feels like a million years since he was subbed off, but he had a big impact on the game initially. We talk about Rice and Phillips, Harry Maguire, Jordan Pickford, and of course we'll touch on Denmark too and have a look forward to England-Italy in the final of Euro 2020, which feels quite extraordinary. But for the time being, I will leave you in the warm hands and the cool embrace of JJ Bull. Right, let's begin now by talking. I think it's only fair, JJ, to talk about the penalty decision, which was converted at the second chance by Harry Kane, with Kasper Schmeichel, who had a fantastic game overall, saving the first. But the penalty, it was divisive in the room at the time, wasn't it? And now I have to say, I've calmed down, so we can talk about it properly. But tell me what you think.
It's not a penalty.
Okay, tell me why.
There's just no way that the contact on Sterling is enough to put him down. He is 100% anticipating that someone will make a challenge.
Yeah.
The challenge, the leg goes in to make the tackle.
The leg did go in.
And it's slightly late, but he doesn't...
does touch his leg.
It doesn't matter. Like, he's amongst other people. Otherwise, you could just go in and be like, and go into someone and fall over. Sure. And you can see that's a foul every single time. The thing is, Sterling, because he runs so quickly and he's so... it's one of the things that makes him so... like he's obviously very strong at the core, mm-hmm. like a metal apple. And he turns very... you know, he turns on like a 360 pirouette instantly. Like, he's analog, not D-pad. Mm-hmm. Very, like, you just move him around really quickly.
Yeah.
Then bursts away to accelerate. And when he runs at you, it's very hard to anticipate exactly where he's going to go and read his movements, because he drops his shoulder very quickly and moves. It's just very difficult to defend against. But he runs straight at people, kind of thinking this is what might happen. A little change of direction shifts the balance to another feet. And the guy puts his foot in slightly behind the ball, doesn't then fully come in and take him out or anything like that. His foot's just upright. But like, his shin touches his shin, and then Sterling feels...
there's some shin touching.
Yeah, but it's just the most minimal of contact, and he just feels it and goes down. And it's something that, like, maybe you could say well played to England for adopting these kind of dark arts that teams who win things tend to have adopted. So Harry Kane was at this all night, buying free kicks that were never free kicks. Denmark were getting wound up by it. It's gamesmanship. It's really clever. The referees fall for it all the time. They buy into it. Kane does it in the Premier League even all the time. But he was doing it tonight. Soon, like, he shields the ball well, but Kane is a big lad. If someone did that to him in a bar, he wouldn't fall over.
Yeah.
But on the pitch, he positions himself in such a way that should the contact come, no matter how light or whatever, he falls over. Well, maybe, and you think the defender is being silly for not being up there, but the defender has to get tight to him.
There's another way of looking at this, though, and, you know, take the other perspective, which is to say, I'm sure these numbers have increased, because Seb Sapsblaw texted them to me about 80 minutes into the game, where he said, he described Denmark as at times a kind of team of Fernandinhos who'd made 17 fouls across the course of the game and had only had one yellow card. I mean, it was very clear that part of their game plan was to make those tactical fouls all across the pitch and to try and break up England's play. Why shouldn't England lean into that? I mean, isn't that kind of a dark art on the other side too?
Yeah, maybe. But then I don't think England were doing that to take advantage of them committing fouls. It's just that when Kane needed to win a foul because he was in a little alley on the wing with nowhere to go, well, what's the best option here?
Does one evil cancel out the other, though, I suppose, is what I'm saying?
It just makes it more evil, I think.
Overall?
Yeah, just the game became malevolent.
Yeah.
And
you're a man who enjoys purity.
Correct. And the dark arts. I've watched that Sterling thing quite a few times now since it happened, because the video's on the internet.
Yeah.
And it's just not a penalty. It's not a penalty. But... like I said to you before,
touches his shin though, and he goes over.
It doesn't matter, Joe. And the thing is, this is the kind of penalty that always seems to happen to England. But something has changed. It was the Higgs boson, whatever it did, that changed it. The world we're in a different reality now. And now England are playing
smart. Hadron Collider has finally had its effect. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that was the whole point of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, there's the firing atoms inside the Hadron Collider, and then the atoms fall over and win a penalty. That's what it was. I mean. Yeah, this is the kind of thing that's happened to England for years and years and years, and they're never wise to it, and they're always like, we are England, we will play the right way, and play to the rules, and the gentlemanly way. And now, like we've said throughout the podcast this month, it's a bit weaselly, and I think it's smart.
Sure.
It is smart. I don't like it. Cunning. I like it when my team does it. Sterling does that. If it's opposite round, you've been furious.
Well, this is when you kind of won me over because I was convinced it was a penalty. There was one camera angle which made the shin touching look quite a lot firmer than the other camera angles. And I enjoyed that camera angle the most. I enjoyed the commentary team saying it was a penalty. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed everyone in my mind saying, shouting at me, that's a penalty, don't listen to the JJ. But when you said, if that was the other way around, you'd be furious. I did have a moment of thinking, oh yeah, if that was Kasper Dolberg had gone down with no touch really, and it was a penalty, I would cry, woe is me, woe is me.
And you know what as well, you can often tell when it's a foul by the reaction of the players. I mean, that's a thing a lot of pundits say on TV, but you really can tell a lot of the time. And the Denmark players seemed sort of surprised and also again, they've gone down. And then they weren't really desperate for the referee to turn it over. They surrendered him, but they weren't going nuts because they seemed to, it's almost like they realised it probably shouldn't be a foul and VAR will have their back. And it'll see it. That it's just not a foul. If it's definitely not a foul, though,
how do you explain the VAR decision? Because my understanding of that would be that that's not a clear and obvious error. There is contact and he's gone down in the box. And if the referee had seen it for the first time, you wouldn't be surprised if he didn't give it as a penalty. But given that VAR looks at it, sees the contact, says it's not, doesn't make a comment about whether it's a penalty or not, but kind of does in the sense of saying that there was no clear and obvious error.
Well, I guess largely this, you could say that this is a... Is it objective? Is that what I mean? When it's your own decision, what do I mean?
Subjective.
Yeah. It's a subjective decision where it varies from person to person. Like you first thought it was a penalty. As soon as Sterling went down, I didn't think it was because I'd seen Sterling do something similar about 10 minutes before. He goes in the box, falls down and then looks up at the referee. It's never a penalty. He's ran into someone. Mm. And someone gets wiped out, which might have been a free kick, but that doesn't matter. And I think... the thing with VAR is that stuff like that is kind of thing you would think they would... I think you would spot that, but then I'm not a referee and I don't know the rules inside. I don't read them at night. So if it's not
presumably
clear,
you are convinced it's not a penalty. So I don't VAR think should overturn it. I'm not saying based on the rules. I don't mean like explain to me the rules of VAR and what the policy is and how it should work. But in your mind, it's very unfair then that VAR looks at that and doesn't overturn it.
I think it's harsh in Denmark. I think it's just a harsh penalty. VAR, should they overturn it? I mean, I think if it hadn't been given in the first place, there was no way ever VAR would turn that into a penalty.
Because it's one of those 50-50 ones, right? Because there, again, would be no clear and obvious error.
Oh, I think it's more than that, though. But so it's weird. And one, I'm sort of contradicting myself. And one way, I sort of think it's good that VAR doesn't change that. Maybe it's because I'm getting frustrated with VAR going through these tiny details. But when you slow things down on replays, sometimes they make it look slightly different. This foul is one where you see it at full speed and you can tell it's not a foul, and you watch it as slow and you can tell it's not a foul. But the referee has seen it, he's right next to it, and you should think in real life he's seen that, so you must... Maybe it's just something different you see in real life.
Yeah.
So they give it to him. I don't know, we should have built a referee. And that would have been able to help us with this one.
A robot referee.
Yeah,
I'm on board with that. I don't mind that at all. Okay, well, I mean, I suppose that leads us on to talk about Kasper Schmeichel, who had a fantastic game. And I think if you had to pick a man of the match from, you know, the Danish team, or if indeed it had finished a draw, or if Denmark had won, probably would have been hands down Kasper Schmeichel, right? I mean, at one point, Seb described him to me as made of iron, and that shot from Sterling in the middle, you know, when it sort of goes into his body and he does his dad's spider thing, that would have hit either myself or Seb and taken us back into the net with the ball. Yeah, it just sort of bounces off Kasper Schmeichel as if he is, straight off the elemental table.
I think Schmeichel's been one of the best keepers in the Premier League for years and years.
Yeah.
It might be underrated because he plays for Leicester. It might be that he's inevitably under the shadow of his very famous dad. But I mean, he won the Premier League with Leicester. He's an international goalkeeper. A lovely boy by all accounts, and a great leader of stuff he's been through the last little while. Like, fair play dealing with all that. As a goalkeeper, again, I'm not a goalkeeper expert, but he's definitely excellent. The saves he made were important, but I think he's got a command of the box when he goes up for corners, whatever. And he's because he's strong, he's able to not batter people out of the way, but people don't mess with him.
He just looks the part, doesn't he? And I know that's not by far from everything you need to be a good goalkeeper, but he just looks totally confident all the time, like total self-belief.
I think defenders would feel that as well.
Yeah.
You think it would settle them a little bit in any situation. I mean, contrasted.
You on your toes as well.
Well, contrasted to Pickford, who looked like he drank about 8 cups of coffee and hadn't eaten for 3 days.
Yeah.
Like one of those cartoons where there's only like 4 frames per second or something, so just running about. It's like Mr. Time and Watch. You know that, do you ever play Smash Brothers? And Mr. Time and Watch is one of the characters. It's early Nintendo. It's one of these things you get in like a little box, like a rectangle box thing. They'd give him away in cereal packets, I think, later on. They had the technology for that. It's just kind of moves around like 4 frames a second, basically. There's only like 3 animation parts to it. That's how picture-wise, it was all over the place. And you could see the England players, I mean, Walker's at one point screaming at him for kicking the ball long and not just catching it.
Yeah.
Whereas at the end, Schmeichel, Cam, leading from the back, doing what a captain does.
Looking like the player that's going to keep them in the game rather than one that might lose them the game.
I thought Højbjerg was good as well. He would be the other... a candidate for your man of the match, I would have said. I mean, Damsgaard obviously played well and scored that free kick, which was superb.
Yeah.
Really well struck. And they put a wall, Denmark put a wall in front of the England wall, didn't they? So Pickford had to really act very, very, very last second.
Yeah.
So I think it'd be harsh to pick on Pickford for that.
I think I have to say on the Pickford issue too, I mean, he did look wobbly this evening, but he didn't concede from open play. Mm-hmm. That's my new thing I'm going to say now. Because, you know, you can't account for that kind of free kick, can you? He's had a good tournament, generally. Like, I think the reason that he looked so off it tonight is because of how he has looked very calm in most of the games. Like, he hasn't really put too many feet wrong. In every game, you feel like there's one or two misplaced passes that make everybody sort of, you know, catch their breath a little bit. But generally speaking, he has had a good tournament, and I wouldn't want this to sully the memory England certainly haven't had a bad keeper at the Euros.
I think they've had a very average goalkeeper. I
don't. So he's a 7 out of 10 player, right?
Yeah, he's very Everton. Like he's very mid-table Premier League. He would never be able to play for one of the top 6. I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't want to be harsh on it. It's not like he's a good goalkeeper. But I think we saw in the last game, who was the England beat in the round before? Was it Switzerland they beat before? No, who was they beat?
No,
my word.
Who? Ukraine. Thanks, Sal. Oh,
I forgot about that.
It's been a long old month.
Oh, God, I'm tired. in that game, there was a couple of times when he's kicking the ball, just mashing it out into the stand.
What does that say about the footwork of England's other keeping options, though? Because like he's chosen because of his ability to play it with his feet. Right?
I think it's a shot stopping, and also because he can launch it. His long passing is amazing.
Yeah,
it's one of the things he's got, that sidewinder, he calls it, out from hands. He can kick it, but he can just put his foot right through the ball and hit it 70 yards, and he's pretty accurate with it. He's not Ederson or Alisson levels at it, but that's a really good tool if you're playing against a team who pushes a high line, which Italy will do in the final, by the way. So Pickford suddenly becomes a very useful player. But I wonder whether, I have no idea, but it seemed to me a little bit like the pressure of the situation might have got to him. Like there's a few players who seemed super amped today. Can't blame them. Semi-final, massive tournament, hugely nervous, the weight of a nation on their shoulders, almost a full crowd. It basically felt like, you know, urging them on and you're fired up and you know you get a big chance. So that's going to make you nervous from the start. But Schmeichel didn't betray those emotions at all.
Sure.
Pickford did. And in terms of having a good tournament, I don't want to make it sound like I'm being negative on Pickford, but England have had a good tournament. England are set up not to concede any shots. What was it I worked out earlier? I think in 5 games, Pickford had 9 shots to save.
Yeah.
So he had 100% save percentage. So you're like, wow, what a goalie. But
yeah.
I don't remember any of them being particularly hard to save.
We did this video on Burnley about 2 years ago and how they had, like, their goalkeeper had an incredible save ratio, save to shot ratio, because of the way that Burnley's centre backs just on the edge of the 18 yard box would kind of funnel whatever shot from range was going to come in, so it would go straight at the goalkeeper, and instead of trying to block the shot, they would just guide the shot to where they knew it was going to be caught or punched away, and it resulted in those kind of like massively warped statistics for saves.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
I mean, I think I forgot what I was going to say.
Don't worry about it. We've done keepers now.
Yeah.
It's making me nervous. Talking about Sean Pickford is making me nervous.
Well, this is the thing. Actually, I know what I was going to say. And one of the things I've
liked... You're getting into my head, JJ. Sorry. That's what's happening.
One of the things I liked about England this tournament is how they have managed to control pressure situations, take the sting out of games. Like the way they were controlling the match at the end there was like Italy, in like peak Italy or
Spain.
It was
wonderful. Have you ever seen England do that?
No.
Passing the ball around with the joy, with the crowd cheering every time it reaches a new player. I mean, also... That the best moment of that string of passes was Luke Shaw's little behind the back ankle knock on to the player in front of him. It was amazing. Wasn't it?
It was a little round the corner one from Phillips, which I thought was even it looked very basic, but it was a risky ball. But because he knows he can make it, it's the thing that like, if you take risks, you're at risk of being turned over. Sure. But if you just are fully confident in your ability and fire the pass exactly where it's meant to go, like you would all the time. Like, you know, if you're just throwing a ball off a wall, you do it 100 times, you know exactly where to throw it each time. As soon as you start thinking about it, you're going to miss.
There is also a moment in the second half, which might be my favourite moment in the whole game, where the ball falls out of the sky from 100 metres. I feel like it's gone higher than the height of the stadium. And it drops down onto Calvin Phillips, who just touches it with his ankle, almost like outside of the boot, round the back, and... It ends up being like an incredible progressive pass, you know, playing pass for Denmark players. First time.
Amazing. Did he mean it? I still don't know.
I don't know. It looked a bit like it just bounced off him. But then the accuracy with which it found his England teammate, I mean, maybe he did.
Well, that's it. Because I thought he was putting his right foot out to catch it like on laces, like just to put it down. But I think his foot is lower than it would be to control it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a better... I mean, I would...
It was perfectly weighted, right?
Yeah.
It would be a remarkable coincidence if he didn't mean it. It's not like one of those, was it a shot or was it a cross things?
It's one of those we just, like, yeah, I meant that. So, and then you convince yourself deep down that you meant it.
Sure.
But
I do that in Rocket League all the time.
Yeah, I do it in real time.
Anyway, let's sort of take it back for a moment because we've spent, you know, half of this ragging on England's goalkeeper when actually they were very good, right?
Yeah.
And what the one thing I want to ask you about first, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. It's come up a lot as a theme throughout the tournament. Denmark are, of course, playing with a back three, with a 3-4-3. And we've seen England already match Germany up with the same formation, not do that against Ukraine, slightly different thing. My expectation here was that they would match up Denmark. You didn't think they would beforehand, and you made a video for FIFA IRL about that. But was that quite a... progressive, like brave move from England to stay with a four and to, you know, push Denmark's wing backs back? Because there were moments in the game where Denmark felt like they had the impetus and were, you know, had a lot of passes about them. But there weren't a huge number of moments in the game where they really threatened or it looked like out wide, particularly there was a free man.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure which of those comes under, but if you think about it, they sort of did defend with a five most of the time anyway, because Rice was always so deep.
Yeah.
In the first half anyway, Rice was playing as a defensive midfielder right in front of the two centre-backs. In the second half, they changed it actually, and I thought it was a really smart change for Southgate. Phillips came and became the six, basically filling in front of the back four. But Rice then filled in at left-back, so Shaw went further up the pitch. Just something that helped Shaw get further up and helped England get in the game more. It did a nice little change. But basically, you've got a diamond with Walker, Stones and Maguire and Rice. So you do have four covered. I think England are the better team and they're at home. It's a huge advantage. And this is the system that they've been working on. And that's the system that England play. You don't want to mess around with it too much. You can play that back three and it works. It worked against Germany very well. But that's the system and they get all their best players in the team they want. And like I said in the preview thing, one of the reasons I thought they were going to play this before with the three midfield is that Christensen for Denmark often moves into midfield and they change their system midway through a game. So they go from a 3-4-3 or like five, whatever it is, into a back four with a 3-3. So to avoid losing numerical superiority or, you know, having that disadvantage, they want to be able to switch themselves. And that's sort of what they're doing in game by just moving players around. It's almost like the formations don't really matter. It's just having players in certain places to have them. I think had Southgate gone at 3-4-3, the game maybe would have quietened right down. Like they didn't match Scotland for one thing. Denmark are a much better team than Scotland.
This game felt like not dissimilar to the Scotland game too. Like it felt like a lot more chaotic.
A lot more physical, I think that was the thing. Yeah. And I think that's what Denmark were going for, right? Because we said, I think we've spoken about this before, but England's whole strategy of this tournament is to avoid any randomness, any chaos, control everything they can and wait for the mistake that they can exploit. And then be clever about it, like win free kicks when you can, win penalties by falling over if you get the slightest nudge in your shin. There's ways to do it and get through the game, and they're doing it very well. They're about to play the masters of it in Italy in the final, so that could be entertaining. Yeah, give us my train of thought. I'm really tired, Joe.
Me too, man. That game what was I saying? Like, completely took it out
what
of
was
me.
I saying, though?
Well, I think the general point you were making was that England were fantastic and they played with that good. Four and they were the best team you've ever seen. And you thought that they were brave. They were brave to play with the four and they played the game on their terms, JJ.
Lots of rotations with the front players as well. Kane keeps dropping deep like he's Messi.
Yeah.
Into midfield.
Kind of is Messi, though.
He's not. I thought Saka did well.
I'm going to ask you about Saka in a minute because he was great.
I'll stay off him then. I thought Shaw overlapping did really well. When Shaw started pushing forward, you see how good he is. He was intercepting so high up the pitch. It's been crucial to how England play. Like, what a player he has become. He's exactly what United paid, what was it, 30 million or something back in the day for, and it's turned into. And
he's how, amazing, isn't he?
I mean, I don't want to get into that Jose Mourinho thing about him basically slacking him off for however many years, but how could he not have seen what was in it? Where was he? It must have been something that wasn't there for so many coaches not to be able to get that out of him.
Yeah.
And now maybe something's clicked in his.
Well, he had that terrible injury, I suppose, and that's
that'll do it.
It was something that won't have helped coaches prior to Mourinho trying to get something out of him. I don't know I'm sure Mourinho would love to think that his involvement kind of, you know, twigged something for sure, but I think it's more the Solskjaer effect. I mean, I think Solskjaer came in and trusted him and played him through some poor periods. And also the style of football that Man United play under Solskjaer that kind of encourages Shaw to get forwards and join the attacks and do what he's good at. And playing alongside Harry Maguire, I mean, like, just does give you that extra security. You don't have to worry so much. You're made to look stupid much less often because your mistakes don't matter as much as they would if you were next to a player not as good as Harry Maguire.
And that's the thing, like, if it's because for someone who's accused of not having a football brain, he looked very much like someone with a very large football brain.
Luke Shaw
playing tonight, yeah.
He's got it all now. I mean, like, the thing that impresses me about him so much is his psychological aspect within games. I mean, he knows exactly when to cut inside to make those challenges. The three times he's done that now towards the end of games, where in this game against Denmark, they didn't need the additional goal. But I mean, it's like it's tactically speaking, it's extremely smart, but also mentality wise, like, it's one of the reasons that I enjoy watching him for Man United is because he's exactly that kind of bastard that plays for the team that will complain about everything, that will go, you know, will complain about something which is very obviously either given as a foul when it should have been or not given when it shouldn't have been, and is totally willing to make himself be entirely, you know, biased and subjective. And every team has a player or two like that, and he is that for Manchester United. You can see him a little bit like that for England too, which probably helps like the cohesive nature of the group as well.
Yeah, I mean, even like Shaw, for me, is probably the best left back in the tournament. I think he's sure. been there.
Does Spinazzola not count?
I think it's weird. So obviously, Spinazzola has been one of the standout stars because of what he's brought to Italy and how important he is to the way they play.
His special role.
Yeah, but I mean, I think if they had Shaw in that team, he'd be amazing.
Yeah.
The same way. It's hard to kind of explain what I mean with Spinazzola. I think Spinazzola's a decent player, but I don't think he's this amazing £50 million you must buy him type guy.
Right, yeah.
He is perfect for that system, mostly because he can run for 100 days. Like, it's like Forrest Gump, but really quick. Just like endless energy. And like when you think Spinazzola would get to the final third by the box, defenders start to work out. You just show him inside because he can't cross on his left. So he's only really got one way out. And then he came up with a couple assists, I think. But yeah, I think Shaw, especially his set piece delivery. We talked about this in another podcast the other day about how many chances Shaw creates. Look at Shaw next to Maguire, who has been excellent in this tournament. Mm. So good. Stones as well. I think Phillips was great tonight.
He grew into the game, Phillips. He wasn't great for the first 15 minutes, I thought, and then he just got better and better and better.
He's just further up
on
the pitch because everything's going through Rice, and that's why I thought it made so much sense putting Phillips in there, because he's much better at getting the ball forward than Rice is. Rice is good at making the safe pass. like, there's so many times I see with Rice where he receives the ball with his back to goal, like in midfield. And I mean, I've, you know, never played football at an elite level, but I would say you should have, you should be side on. You should be able to see more of the pitch when you're receiving. Mm. So he scans a lot, which is good, but I just don't see why you'd have your back to goal. You're not trying to block anything. It's the kind of thing a defender would do rather than a midfielder, mm. or like a striker. It doesn't make sense to me. Further up the pitch, maybe you should do it. But there's that. And then when he receives the ball, naturally it always goes back. There's a couple of times today he made some nice forward passes, but they were obvious forward passes because he was facing forward when he got it. Like, so he gets the ball and he can instantly see because he's facing forward. Whereas Phillips, I think, you often see him, he's always on the half turn and he gets it. And then I would say his range of passing is a bit better as well.
Yeah.
So suited that role a lot better. I thought, just, yeah, to reiterate, I thought Rice had a really decent game though and was really useful later on tactically for filling that kind of third centre-back role that
they and the right wing role towards the very end of the game as well. I think he stayed up there for 10 minutes.
Yeah, well.
Right, when we come back from this break, I'm going to ask you about Bukayo Saka.
Okay.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And we're back. And now I'm going to ask JJ Bull about Bukayo Saka because he was subbed off around 70 minutes for Jack Grealish. Sterling went over to the right. But prior to that, I mean, he created the goal. It looked a bit like initially that Sterling had scored, but it transpired it was an own goal. And it was maybe the third or fourth time that Saka had used that really effective direct running to get in behind. This was a fantastic little through ball too, managed to stay onside perfectly. It feels almost a shame when he comes off. I mean, it's like when you talk about the substitutions, you think, well, for a start, you can't take Harry Kane off and you can't take Raheem Sterling off. And for all of his work, I guess primarily off the ball, you can't take Mason Mount off, at least without the system changing. You don't really want to take Saka off because he often looks like the brightest spark on the pitch. But you sort of have to, don't you? If you want to make a change.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Because you can't take the other lads off. Especially Mount, I think, is so important off the ball.
Yeah.
The stuff he does out of possession is like absolutely fundamental to how England want to win the ball high up the pitch. So the only change really Southgate can make was to take Saka off.
Yeah.
And it's almost like it's just kind of the easy choice to make because he's not one of the, you know, that's one of the interchangeable positions. Could be that he's worked hard for 70 minutes, now you want something new on, maybe you want Grealish because in theory he's going to give you better control of the ball. Rather than trying to take people on and lose it, he's going to win you a free kick.
Do you know what though? It didn't feel like an upgrade bringing Jack Grealish on. I mean, like for a good 20 minutes, there were moments in the extra time where I was glad that he was on the pitch and that he was keeping the ball a bit better, as you would say, as you said. But it took a long time for me to think, like, I'm glad to see him.
It's because he comes on the pitch like Jesus has arrived. Then like lights come on and everyone's thinking, oh, we've won the game.
That's not what I meant.
Flames come up. His name flies by in like a blimp or something.
Yeah.
Jack Grealish is decent. He's not this. I don't know why everyone's obsessed with Grealish.
He's amazing.
Because
he takes players on.
Foden's amazing.
Got fantastic hair and those legs are. Look at those legs, man. You break a breeze block on those legs.
Yeah, you could definitely crush a man.
He puts fear into the eyes of defenders. You know, he's a smart footballer and he brings something very different to what the other players on the pitch already have. Right.
It's a really small sample size, but
he's not. What did you call him? Decent. That is very harsh.
I mean, do
be more accurate.
I just think Foden is this kind of this next level player that makes things happen. And I think the substitution that Southgate then made later on where he took Grealish off made total sense to me because Foden had done so much. Like Foden's choice to pass, it's really hard to kind of spot, but I'm trying to watch it recently because I want to know what Guardiola's been teaching him. Like what's he been waiting? What's this tempo thing he's always on about? What's he need to pause for? And the passes that Foden's making when they're trying to slow down the game, like sometimes it's a little very short fired pass back at someone who's just passed to him. It's immediately back, bounce pass. It's called a bounce pass, I think, or wall pass. Goes straight back to him. And then he'll look up, and on the screen you see a player about 10 yards to his left. He's like, well, that's an obvious pass. That's where he'll go. But instead, he pings it to the further player along, exactly the same pace he would to the guy who's 10 yards next to him. And that just shifts the game on a little bit and just moves everything a little bit more.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Grealish will play the short pass and go for the 1-2. He'll take someone on. He'll run into a little alley.
He likes to be on the ball.
Yeah, and he's got good control of the ball. And I think Foden just works in the, sounds quite pretentious, and it just works in a different like plane to everyone around him. I think he's amazing. And
would you like to see him and Pedri in the same team?
Yes, I would love him and Pedri. That's the thing, that him and Pedri are in that same sort of, I can't believe how good they are at the age they are.
Right.
They're so, and there must be reasons, maybe Foden tries things that you don't want at certain times, and that's why, say Saka might.
Well, I mean, having a player who's on a different plane to every other teammate isn't always a good thing. Having a player that's on a different plane to every other teammate isn't always a good thing. I mean,
not if they're traveling.
Well, I mean, I think if the expectation is that, you know, if Foden's expectation of his teammates maybe is he's asking more of them than they might give him. You know, there's one way of looking at it, different perspective.
Yeah, it genuinely might be one of the things that you want the cohesion in your team, and if you've got one guy who's operating like he's drinking the most expensive petrol.
Yeah.
Another one's just need normal.
Sure.
But they perform to a high level.
Yeah.
It's like little, oh no. It's like when you are choosing your loadout on Warzone. And you can add certain attachments to your gun to make it play how you want. Right? But all you need is the base weapons to be able to kill enough people.
Yeah.
But Foden's got everything unlocked and he can use it when he wants to. He doesn't need that. He just needs the base weapons.
He's gone over the prestige 10 times. That's the...
something like that. I'm really sorry about all the Warzone.
Can I ask you about Mason Mount? Because there was a comment in the chat, and I see this fairly regularly with Mason Mount, someone saying he's super overrated, I don't get it. I think the key there being, I don't get it, because a lot of what Mason Mount does is not always the easiest to spot. I mean, I can consider him a passenger in a game because I don't understand how to watch it, what it is that he's doing. But you and Alex often talk about his off-the-ball work being very important. Can we expand on that without just saying he's diligent, which is what I normally do?
I think it's these kind of intangibles, is that word I want? That you can't really measure it. He reads the game so well. He always seems to be in the right place at the right time.
Right.
His first touch is incredible. Like technically, he's one of the best players England have, like by far.
Right.
There's times you'll see in the Premier League, Champions League, I think in the final he had some first touch, the ball drops out of the air and he just kills it while he's running at full speed. So technically a great player, so you want him there. But he has that willingness to chase every single thing down that he needs to, an understanding of when to go and when not to. Like it appears almost as though it's natural to him and it hasn't had to have been coached constantly into him. So like a manager can mould him and say, I want you to do this, and he understands it straight away. Yeah. Rather than having to go through drill after drill after drill to work out exactly when and where and how. And he doesn't get huge numbers because a lot of the things he does are a couple of stages before the final action or the final shot, something like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm trying to think of an example tonight. He'll often press, like you see, like for Italy, for example, Verratti pushes up high to win the ball. And you saw Denmark tonight, Højbjerg was pushing up high to do it. Mount does that for England. Doesn't always get the ball because people try and avoid him and try and get around. But as soon as he gets the ball, he knows what to do with it as well. His decision making is excellent. He's just a really great footballer. Like
it's just his final sort of end product bit isn't quite there.
I don't know if it's because he's not getting the right positions. This is something that... So I think Mount, for example, is a much better player than James Maddison. I really like James Maddison as well.
Sure.
But Maddison, who has talked about himself this season or last season, saying that he knows he needs to up his numbers. That's what he needs to do to get to the next level. And... he doesn't produce enough assists or goals. His chance creation numbers are massive. He's one of the top, I think, in the Premier League.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I'm right in thinking that. A lot of that might be set pieces, though. And Mount tends to be quite high up those lists for chance created and progressive passes, things like that. But he just does whatever is needed. He'll fill in for players. He can play anywhere across the front, anywhere in the midfield. Has a total understanding of the game. So he just know when he's there. If you take him off, I think the problem is, the reason I didn't want to take him off earlier, I would have said, is because suddenly you're losing someone who can add to your attack and to your midfield and defend while he's attacking.
Yeah.
And you can just rely on him to be in the right place. He understands the game. It's like if you take him out, it's like you remove knowledge from the game.
You lose a lot of the balance too, right? Because of that.
I think so. It's more, to me, it's more like that knowledge of what's going on in the game. It's like, you know, you see, before you put a sub on, you have to like download the game into their head. Whereas Mount's got all the information there. So you take him out, suddenly you've got to swap that round and they can't.
Yeah.
You can't put a USB into Jordan Henderson.
Oh, I wish you could, man. That would be fun, wouldn't it?
Well, maybe you can.
Would you have that, the Neuralink?
A Neuralink, I was thinking of another way to put the, I don't know, yeah, I don't know how to, the Neuralink? Is that a thing?
Well, I mean, that's what they call, that's what Elon Musk calls it, like a Neuralink.
Well, you put like a chip in your head.
Yeah, basically. He's always talking about how people's like stupid hands are the thing that slows all the information down, and that's the next big thing to get past, be the truth with footballers.
Maybe if there's a point where you get half humans, half robots, so you could have... really bouncy legs.
Yeah.
Or to sprint. Imagine footballers, they could sprint even faster.
Sure.
And they're half robots. Then it becomes robot wars.
Do you know, I have to say, I'm all up for like the doping league. I'm well up for it. I reckon let's have a separate one where you can do what you like.
But they can run extra fast forever, all game long.
Be like a sort of thing you'd see in a futuristic sci-fi film or something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm game for that.
I mean, on that note, you saw how knackered Denmark were.
Sure.
Like, had they been made of robotic parts, they'd been able to maybe see that out, but they were all just completely goosed by the
end. I wanted to ask you about that because they looked, as you said before, there were moments in the game that they really controlled the ball well. They never looked hugely threatening, but you felt that they carried a threat, if that makes sense. But after about 70 minutes, they just looked like exhausted. And I wondered if it was because they've been running a lot for the last, you know, 3 weeks. Like, they've done an awful lot of pressing.
Yeah. I mean, they've also had, I don't think the trauma they went through will have affected their running numbers, but no. I think they've probably had quite a tiring time emotionally. Yeah. It's been a long tournament for them specifically. But yeah, they've played a lot of football. Their squad isn't as deep as England's, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Although, I mean, England haven't really, I was talking about rotation the other day, but Rice and Phillips have played like every game. Max played every game apart from Maguire. Sterling's played
like every minute of every
game. Kane looked fitter tonight than he has done at any point in the tournament.
Yeah.
Like he had more energy. But then I think England's part of their strategy genuinely might be linked to fitness. I mean, it's all coordinated now. Your coaching sessions are linked to your fitness coaches, which are linked to what you want to achieve.
Yeah.
So you work out what your load you can give them and how you can implement
it. Southgate did say that specifically though, because he said like, you know, they've learnt from the semi-final in the World Cup in 2018 where their players were knackered. So, yeah. I mean, obviously they're focusing on it in some way.
Well,
those attacking players have been rotated.
It makes total sense when you think about how they played against Scotland, how tame is not the word, it sounds a bit harsh and tame, but how... You know, controlled, we'll
measured.
Say. Yeah, measured, composed. They were against Croatia and Czech Republic. No danger at all. No really Russian in any moments in the games. My language has started to stop. Have you noticed that now?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. No many moments.
Yeah. I didn't mean to say that.
I thought it might have just been a thing you do.
No, I think I'm just starting to shut down. But so, yeah, the way they're playing those games, controlling it, it's all part of the strategy of the tactical system is as much the way they want to play and get their best players on the pitch as it is to control the workload of the players. They press at certain times. They don't press a lot. They press for the first 10, 15 minutes. They really go for teams.
Yeah.
And you'll notice in this game, they were all over Denmark the first 10, 15, and then it calms right down and they just start managing it. And
same
there's a little
thing,
push
right?
into the
whole,
first half.
There's the whole tournament. Every game has been like that.
Yeah.
This one felt a little different as the game went on, and that's what made me nervous about it because I think what I've grown accustomed to is, as you say, the first 10 minutes, maybe 15 in some games of the first half and the last 5 minutes of the first half being moments where England will dominate and look aggressive and be direct and attack and go quickly.
Yeah.
Something similar in the second half was slightly different, but that happened at the beginning of the game and then that sort of disappeared for the whole middle where it felt for this 10 minutes England were on top, the next 10 minutes Denmark looked like the stronger and the brighter team, the one more likely to create something. It was only really after that 70-minute mark where it didn't appear that Denmark were ever going to have a shot on goal again. Do you know, like, having said that, even though they were extremely tired, or at least appeared to be, they defended very, very well, like all the way to the end of the game.
But they defended with numbers on their they're clever footballers and they're organised. The manager knows what he's doing. They're a good team, Denmark. They got to the semi-final of the tournament, deservedly so. But that 70-minute thing times perfectly. It's not a coincidence, don't think, that that's when Larsen, Damsgaard and Dolberg come off. Dolberg's movement up front, really dangerous. He was getting shots on goal. It was, wasn't quite striking them as clean as he wanted to, I think. So Pickford had a few easy picks off the floor from Dolberg shooting, but his movement was creating space for players like Brathwaite and Damsgaard in behind. Damsgaard scored the free kick, constant threat. You saw, heard Lee Dixon talking about how he's glad he's going off because he was a thorn in the side.
Yeah.
All times. Never say that apart from the football, do you? Thorn in the side.
Sure.
Larsen's the guy who puts their free kicks in. But a lot of the strength of Denmark is that they are quite physical and they are physically imposing. And then when you don't have the energy to do that quite as you want, suddenly you've got to be a bit more controlled with the way you play. You can't leave yourself open by pushing. So that's when you become a bit more measured and sit back a little bit. And that's probably why it looked like Denmark were sitting off them a bit, because they were in turn waiting for England to make mistakes. In fact, I said that to you, didn't I? It's like England are waiting. So their strategy is to wait for mistakes by opponents, but typified by Pickford being all jittery, it seemed like England were more likely to make the mistake until that was about
60 minutes in. I think it was. Yeah. I think it was energy levels.
It must be.
I mean, what I would say though, and maybe I'm a little bit biased, you'll have to tell me. Yes, Denmark are a physical team, but England matched that physicality throughout the game. It didn't feel that there was any point where, other than at the corners, where every Denmark player and supporter was on top of, you know, Pickford or like basically on the goal line, and that felt intimidating and threatening as a vision, but never came to anything. You know, none of those corners really looked threatening at all, or were threatening at all. England were a match for that physicality. There were no moments where it felt like Denmark are the stronger team, Denmark are the quicker team, like Denmark are winning this particular battle. Like England were head to head the whole time,
and they were totally wise to when you have to go into a battle with someone like Poulsen or I know Kier or something like that, like guys who can mess you up if they want.
Yeah.
Knowing when to suddenly let them have the advantage of the balance so you go down to win a free kick.
Yeah.
Really clever play. And the thing with England, if you think about it, like however many years, like 30, 40 years, England produce very good footballers who are very athletic. Like they always have strong, fast players. They always do. What they've done in the past, and Seb has often said this, is that what England have tended to do in the past is try and out-passion the opposition. What you've got now is England using their athleticism and being smarter. Like, it's one of the things Southgate's put in. He's made England nicer.
Yeah.
So like as a neutral, I honestly am most of the time for like England. They're more likable. I like the lads in the team. They're all lovely boys. Like Bukayo Saka is like just a lovely guy.
Sure.
Phil Foden, good guy. All these guys, right? Harry Maguire, there we go. But they're all like, think of Maguire, like big guy, smart with when he's going into these headers and what he's doing. You've got Kane is a big center forward, you know, built like Lewandowski, goes down very easily when he needs to, stays up when he can. Sterling, like so fast, but his core, like he is so strong, Sterling.
He's running 100 miles an hour at 120 minutes
his
of the game.
Core strength and balance is
amazing.
Like he's an incredible like, athlete.
Yeah.
Like it's so fast and really clever.
Yeah.
It goes down super easy in the box because his momentum almost takes him down, but he's putting himself in that position. And that's it. It's that combination that I like with Southgate. What he's brought in is England is a stereotype with English footballers that, you know, they're all kind of like, and they're maybe a bit not the smartest tool, the sharpest tools.
In the box.
Come on now. Yeah. The box of football. And now they have adopted or have embraced the fact that they're actually quite clever.
Sure.
And they're allowed to be clever.
They're like multifunction Swiss Army knives now.
Yeah. Remember when like Graham Lassalle was getting slagged off because he read the Times or something?
Sure.
Like that's gone now.
It was the Guardian.
I think the Guardian, there we go. All the these players I think would know what's going on in the news now.
Yeah.
And you sort of see it in the way they play the game. It's just different. It's a more mature
team. I love it.
Yeah, I bet you do.
It just feels like there's no very, very limited toxicity.
Yeah. Better wait till it goes wrong in the final.
Well, on that note, we'll be back shortly after this break.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And we're back. And now we're going to look forward to Sunday's final. I can't really believe I'm saying that, JJ. Sunday's final, including England and Italy. This is a game, I don't know, I was talking to, erstwhile Stafford Blore the other day, who said Italy strike him as the team that, this is after they'd qualified, by the way, they strike him as the team that everybody thinks will make it from the beginning, but the ones that never actually do, and it's always taken over by another team which is slightly more cynical or, you know, a little bit more mature. But England-Italy, it felt like it could have been the final from the first games that were played. And it now is the final after all of those games have been played. How do you step out of your tactical zone for a moment? You're a human being. Tell me what you think.
Am I pleased? I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
You don't have to be pleased. Nice. I didn't mean, are you pleased? I just mean, like,
I know, but I'm trying to work out. I'm just genuinely talking out loud.
I'm trying to feel the gravity, and I can't I'm in shock a little bit.
We're sort of in this bubble, in this office all the time watching the game. So, like, walking here from the station earlier and seeing loads of England fans going about with their England shirts on.
Yeah.
Started for the first time to feel a bit of the buzz about it, but then you come in here and then nobody here seems to really care until
I really suck the buzz out of the room.
Like, I was well hyped for the Scotland wins, but yeah, I think they're the two best teams. I really like watching Italy. I still think, so at that point on how Italy are the kind of ones you'd think would be there but then get outdone earlier, that has to happen before the final.
Yeah,
I think now they're in the final, I think they're very much, I think they'll be very wise to what they're doing.
Yeah,
home advantage must be a thing. In Wembley, imagine like how excited everyone's going to be. And
I mean, England still haven't conceded a goal from open play.
But this is the thing, like the hurdle, right, for England for years has been getting past the semi-final. That's been the hurdle.
Yeah.
And they've done that. And now it's a whole other thing they've got to think about, which nobody knows how to do.
Yeah.
This is the thing. I mean, they've got...
Now it's just about which team can relax the best, play their game, and remember their instructions and not let the occasion get to them too much, right?
Yeah, it'll be so tactical. I think...
I couldn't do it. I honestly couldn't do it. Like, I would lose my head immediately.
What playing?
I would be... Before the first thing went wrong, I'd be thinking something's going to go wrong. And then it would inevitably go wrong because I would manifest that through my negative, pessimistic outlook.
Yeah.
And then when it had gone wrong, I'd go, my God, it's gone wrong. I've got to make it back now. I've got to make it back to neutral, to zero, to the middle ground so that I can, you know... kick on.
Yeah.
And then I'd start running around and fouling. I'd probably get a red card, you know.
I'd watch that.
Yeah, well, thanks. Well, you know, it would be entertaining for everyone other than me. But massive respect to the players that are going to go and play in that game because I can't really imagine nerves like it.
I think the huge advantage England have is being at Wembley. That's massive with fans. The other...
Does that not add to the pressure though? Like...
I don't know.
To lose in front of their own fans?
I think they feel... This is the thing that was kind of levelled at Scotland, actually. He was saying that when they played at Hampden, there's pressure of the fans. You have to play on the front foot and control the game. It doesn't suit the way that you play under Steve Clarke.
Whereas you don't get that from England fans in this tournament.
No, I think it's just... it seems more like just joy and less... I mean, in the past, it's just been pure arrogance and big-headedness. And it's really funny when they fall over. It's really funny. But now there's a little bit of change to how that has worked. It's mostly people in the media. I think other media, we are media as well, obviously.
Yeah.
I find the way that's talked about sometimes makes it seem like that's what all England fans do. Not all of them do. And I've realised through some of your words, Joe, that actually a lot of England fans are just kind of like, we think we're going to lose every game and it's nice when you don't. That's quite refreshing. I've got friends that have been out watching England tonight. So
Beneath the crust, you know, that's where we live, beneath the crust.
Beneath the crust.
Yeah, the crust being everything you think. And then the massive underbelly, soft and spongy and worried, you know?
The underbelly of the crust.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's no chainmail in the underbelly.
Italy. I'm struggling to deal with all the and ifs.
The thing I was thinking all day is if Seb was here, what he'd say is at some point he'd managed to say the referee wants to make it all about himself and all referees are scumbags. I'm pretty sure that is Seb's general take on things.
I thought the ref fell for an awful lot of things tonight. Need a strong ref in the final because both teams will be at it.
It'll be the German guy, Breich.
I like him. He's good.
He's great, man.
He Felix. Doesn't stand for nonsense when
Felix
at
Breich.
It.
And he looks fantastic in that pink shirt.
It's really exciting that the game's in London. Oh, that's what I was going to say before I lost what I was thinking about. Italy versus Spain was like such a magic game to watch. It sounded exhausting. Like, it looked exhausting, I should say. Yeah. Bonucci came out afterwards and says it's the hardest game he's ever played.
Ever?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It might just be hyperbole because he's just out of the game and he's knackered. Like, that was difficult. But that could be a thing because they ran a lot and their game is based on a lot of running.
Yeah.
That'd be really fit. Even Barella came off and he's built of energy.
Yeah.
That's where he came from, the sun.
I mean, I suppose where they're watching from their hotel rooms or whatever, they'll be rather pleased that England also went to extra time tonight. Because otherwise England had one less day of rest.
Yeah.
And, but then I don't think
the players who probably need the rest, like Rice came off obviously at 90, he's played almost every minute.
Yeah.
Some of those players will need a rest and they'll have the recovery time. But like we said, they've managed the workload all through the tournament and they've not played a team who's bust them from box to box every single time. Whereas Italy versus Spain was relentless. Both teams had to press relentlessly or they'd end up, their system didn't work. And that's all that they're built on.
Can I ask you a question about system?
Yes.
Do you think there's a chance England will go to a three?
Yeah, I do. Because they're really good, Italy. I think the things you're going to look at with Italy are that they play a high line and you get Raheem Sterling.
Yeah.
And I genuinely think that'll be most of the game plan is that.
And Saka maybe.
Maybe Saka. I think Foden was so good tonight, you might even put Foden on.
Yeah.
Just for that little cameo he had. Just a chance to make something happen, maybe play Sterling. Well, it depends what Mancini does. Who replaces Spinazzola? It has to be Emerson, really.
Yeah.
That changes the way they play and he's not quite sure when to go where. So you're going to get certain moments in transition where Emerson's not going to be in exactly the right position. I mean, they're going to be drilled to high heaven in training this week to make sure that he knows that and it's all like codified and it's built into him. He's downloaded it, basically.
Sure.
That's what he needs to have done.
He's copying it over from the hard drive.
Something like that. Yeah. Deep down in the master, what do you call it? The mainframe. The mainframe.
The motherboard.
The motherboard, sure. It was in the motherboard. So that's something, but I think you'll target that. And I think Sterling would be the one you'd want to be on against it.
Yeah.
Because I think he'd be
on the right hand side.
I think so, yeah. Maybe.
So would you play Foden on the left or Grealish maybe?
I'd want Foden. I think he's just gonna do more than Grealish. But Grealish will win fouls, which will be useful. It's the kind of thing. It'll be you have to think of this way.
Mm.
These clever players, I think Sterling is gonna be their main threat, the one they want. They're gonna have pace. Jadon Sancho might be really good in this game.
Wouldn't you still worry about Saka though? Like, I mean, if there is space in behind Emerson, if there's some confusion about when and where to go, like Saka's direct running today. I mean, let's not forget he was the one to make that breakthrough run for the first goal. I feel like he's going to play.
He might do. Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, Saka's good. Saka doesn't get the numbers for me. I don't know. I think Saka's like he's 19 as well. It's crazy. Like it's crazy how good he is at 19. Because you just forget how old he is when you look at him.
I don't, man. I think he looks younger than
19. He's got a young face, for sure. But
it's when you get the close-up of him. Now, obviously, when you see him, you know, running down the side of the pitch from the wide broadcast angle, you don't notice any difference. But when you get the close-up, I think he looks like he could be 14. If he told me he was 14, I'd be a bit surprised, but not, I would believe it.
Yeah, I just mean the way he like conducts himself on the pitch, like specifically on the pitch, not out of it.
Yeah.
Decision making is very good. Fast, good, great touch.
He was in that great England TikTok video, you know, where he falls off his little inflatable
unicorn
thing. And then,
I remember that one. Yeah.
That was very fun, wasn't it?
You liked that one, didn't you?
Anyway, should we do points are bad?
Yeah.
Because we forgot to do it.
Oh, no.
We didn't forget, but.
I think we're out of time.
I've got. We've got one more game left after this one. I haven't added them up yet, so I'm going to do it as we go. So for today's game, the points currently doesn't matter. No one's passing anybody. JJ, you said 0-0 England, Denmark win on penalties. It didn't go to penalties, sadly, so you get a minus point for that.
England did technically win it on a penalty, so maybe I should get
bonus 10 points. That would be a little bit of rule bending.
Yeah, okay.
There's a plus for not going to penalties, and also, of course, there were three goals within the game, so you've added four today, which means that you, until I do Seb's score, are even with Seb on 113. You won't be in a moment. Alex, of course, said 1-0 England, so he's adding 2 points because he's a coward. I said 3-0 England, so I'm adding 2 points also to put me on 130. And Seb said 2-0 England, so he's just adding the 1 point there to be on 114. Now, you do have to worry about the final because there's only 1 point in it with you and Seb. You could finish third, JJ. And, of course, all eyes are on Alex Stewart now, who's finishing today on 98 points. Will he get the centenary? Will he stay underneath? It's hard to say. We need him to gain three or more points, or two or more, I suppose, to keep it at 100 from the final. And so I expect that when he does finally send through his prediction, it will be extremely cowardly as usual.
Is there a rule where you can't do the same prediction as someone else?
No, we didn't make that rule. We did that in the World Cup in 2018 because there was only three of us playing, and it was quite fun, actually.
Yeah.
Maybe we should introduce that when we do this again.
Okay.
Into PAB.
Yeah.
But I will be asking you now for your prediction for the final.
Yeah.
I think I know what it is.
Is it because I've been telling you for about 3 weeks now?
Yeah. And just to double check, England's fantastic performance this evening hasn't changed your mind about that.
Nope. And I'm very pleased for England and all England fans that they've reached the final. It's a great achievement. And it makes it all the worse that Italy are going to win 2-1.
Okay. Italy 2-1.
Yeah.
I think we're going to win on penalties. And it'll be 1-1.
Genuinely, I would love that. It would be really, really cool.
I think that's going to happen.
It'd be fun.
1-1, win on penalties.
No, I'm into that. Yeah.
And I wonder if we... Seb Stafford-Blora sent a voice message.
Yeah, that's great. Having a final to prepare for, because usually this point of an international tournament we sort of lose interest, quarterfinal, semi-final, England out. And now you get sort of 3 days, 4 days where you just get to think, oh, final on Sunday, final on Sunday, final on Sunday, final tomorrow. That's just very cool. Don't really get much of that with Tottenham, obviously. So this is kind of cool.
God, he sounds tired, doesn't he?
The gulag's really
taken out of him. Where was he today?
He's parachuting in from the gulag.
Oh, he's here.
Yeah, he's here. Sorry, I forgot he was here.
I forgot he was here. Anyway, that's Seb. We've heard a little bit of Seb there. So that's nice. Seb will be back, by the way, for the final on Sunday, which we're looking forward to, and that's going to be nice. But for the time being, JJ Ball the Bullard, thank you.
Thank you, Joe Devine.
It's been a fantastic day.
It has. I'm genuinely quite excited for England. I'm not looking forward to having to watch it on TV for the next 80 years every couple hours, but yeah.
Sure. Good. That bit of it isn't going to be quite as much fun, is it? But otherwise, I've had a nice time.
Yeah, I'm happy for you. It's good.
Thanks, as usual, to our crack production team of Don and Sol there. And there's Sol's hand. That's a lovely hand, isn't it? Isn't that a lovely hand? We'll be back on Sunday with Seb Stafford-Blore and JJ Bull. Until then, au revoir, bienvenue, tschüss, ciao, other things, goodbye, farewell, and do take care of yourselves, people.